Hey there, welcome to SaaS Unbound Podcast. I'm your host and Dana, Head of Growth at SaaS Group, serial acquirer buying wonderful SaaS businesses to take them to the next level. And here I chat with inspiring founders and experts to get an inside scoop on how they made their business success. And today with me is Ilya, CEO and founder of Team GPT, your shared AI workspace to help you seamlessly integrate AI into your team's workflow. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Anna. Thanks so much for inviting me on the show. I'm very excited to be
here.
Sure.
Absolutely. You know, being a user of Team GPT myself, I'm super excited. You actually asked me before we started recording, like almost 250 episodes to this day. Like, are you more excited than me for this one? No. I am very excited. So, great to see you here. And maybe let's start with your background. I know that you got a bit going on before you launched Team GPT. So how did you get to do what you're doing?
Yeah, well, I was born in Bulgaria. And over there, I was a math competitor for many years, for about 10 years. I was on the national mathematics team. Generally, I was going in this technical direction up until the point where I decided to do finance. And I graduated in finance from Italy, from Bocconi University, spent some time in China. We discussed it right before the podcast. And then when I came back to Europe, I was wondering what to do with my life. Two of my friends, they had just started this startup in the field of data science and machine learning. And I didn't know what to do. It sounded interesting. So I joined them as a co-founder. And I co-founded my first startup, 365 Data Science. Back then, nobody knew what data science was. Actually, data science was coined as a term by one of the co-founders of LinkedIn. And it was referring to, I don't know, you're making smart decisions based on data and so on. And we kind of were pioneers in this field where we were educating people on the topics of data science, machine learning. My role was to create courses with my expertise in mathematics, statistics, Python programming, machine learning, deep learning. And together with my team, we created more than 100 courses on the topics of data science machine learning. We sold to more than 4 million people online. We have taught them how to train these AI models. And yeah, it was very exciting. Actually, we bootstrapped this whole business. We reached about $30 million in revenue. Everything was going kind of super well for us because the timing was very good. Now, when I look back, we got super lucky that we were so early on in this field. But yeah, what did we do? So we were creating the courses. Later, we created our own website, our own platform. We were putting stuff on YouTube. We were making money from YouTube ads. Back in the day, you could make money from ads on YouTube. Right now, you can't. And yeah, so this is kind of how I got in this field. Fast forward to today, ChatGPT came out. And basically, it was the biggest and baddest large language model ever created. And I was very skeptical at first. I'm like, I know these models. I have trained these models. They don't work. And then I saw what OpenAI had done with a couple of billion dollars worth of training. This kind of turned me around to the point of, I sometimes call it this biblical transition. I was from someone who didn't believe in the technology. I was like, this is the best thing ever. This is the most exciting technology. And I started preaching about it. So yeah, I had a team. We were in data science and machine learning for about 10 years. Now it's called AI. And we're still in the same field, but we call it differently. And we started Team GPT, the software that we're currently running.
Right. Awesome. And yeah, and as far as I remember, I think I've heard it on one of your previous podcasts, Team GPT really was kind of like this wrapper for ChatGPT. And since then, I think it evolved quite rapidly. But if you could tell me like how it has been evolving since then and what was the biggest driver of that change, that would be great.
Yeah, so it started as 100% ChatGPT wrapper. Like, not only this, we were at the drawing board and we were thinking, these models are so powerful, but the wrappers are so bad. And we created this internal tool, a wrapper, to be able to hook up with ChatGPT, with Gemini, with Claude. And we wanted to basically compare the performance of the different models. We wanted to see what is possible. Now, once we did this, we kind of were lacking some collaboration features. So we quickly added them. We added some prompt library. We added some other stuff. And then everybody who was hearing about this were like, man, this is so good. And actually, then Italy banned ChatGPT. I don't know if you remember this, but Italy banned it for a month. I graduated in Italy. So all my friends were like, how can I access this? And I was just sending them a link to our platform. Back then, it was on chatgpt.triveta.com, which was another business of ours. And they were using it there. And everybody was loving the software. So one day, my co-founder found the domain teamgpt.com. And I was like, oh, man. Like, I have to try this out. Like, I have to try selling this tool under this name and see how it's going to go. So we did it. 1 month later, we had 1,000 users. 3 months later, 3,000 users. 6 months later, we had 30,000 users. And this was kind of the point at which we understood, oh, we're onto something. We have invested like $6,000 in this, and it's already, you know, working quite well, creating value for the people. People love it. They want more of it. To us, it was kind of like, okay, cool. We built something people want. And we expected that they would release a collaborative interface very quickly after us. But like, I thought it's their roadmap. To this day, 2 years later, the collaboration in ChatGPT is pretty bad. And all of these tools, they are kind of betting on the fact that LLM experiences are personal, like personal assistants, personal messages, and so on. Nobody is doing good collaborative experiences. This was one of the things that we decided to focus on a bit more, because collaboration on its own is a very tough problem. Now, the other stuff that came evident, and you have to, like, and I'm talking to anybody listening right now, when you're testing out an idea, you're doing it to gather information. So we were gathering information. We're talking to our clients. We were analyzing a lot of the data that was coming, passing through our website. And we're kind of seeing the use cases. We have identified thousands of use cases which are solved by ChatGPT, or people are trying to solve with ChatGPT. So even if it's unsuccessful, we know the intent. And this is the point at which we created a much better hypothesis, a data-driven hypothesis about what are the important use cases, what are the stuff people want to get done, where is the value overall in these models. And we identified the use cases and we focused on building user interfaces to make these better. So apart from chat, we're doing pages, we're doing different tools. A very simple tool is image to text. You paste an image, it takes out the text. You can do this with the basic ChatGPT, but people don't know that they can do it. And we realized that for many of the use cases people have, even if the models are capable of doing it, they don't know about it. So yeah, so started as a ChatGPT wrapper. And by the way, the hypothesis was another hypothesis. Models will become better and they will become cheaper as time goes by, up until the point that they have a price war with each other. 2 years later, and nobody believed us, right? But we were in the field for 10 years, so we knew it was going to be like this. Right now, we see that DeepSeek has brought this kind of intelligence almost for free, and kind of all of the value is in the wrappers. So how do you wrap it up? So now that you have this intelligence, what do you do with it? I would say that if people were laughing at the wrappers 2 years ago, now everybody's seeing, yeah, wrappers are how you harness the technology.
That's great.
I'll stop here. I guess it's too long of an answer for
anything. No, but that was perfect. But, you know, I still like... It seems a great story, you know, like back then with your first startup, it was, yeah, like you said, it's great timing, right? Obviously, you were selling good product, but I think you're right. It's just kind of, again, you got maybe lucky with that wave and, you know, you were able to ride it again with a great product, you know, and adding value to the customers. But you know, it's still a big bet, right? What if ChatGPT builds a great collaboration flow tomorrow. It's a big bet for you guys and for your investors now as well. Do you, and I mean, probably you're at that point where it still makes sense for a lot of your customers to stick with you guys, but yeah, do you have kind of a plan B?
So the learnings that we have accumulated in these 2 years, we can launch 50 different products and all of them will have good traction if we market them well. It's very interesting. Like, I need some diagrams to show you how we think about this. I would say that a couple of things here. First of all, OpenAI cannot build everything. So this is like, OpenAI cannot build everything. Microsoft cannot build everything. So Microsoft is in the business of killing every startup in the world for the past 30 years. And they have successfully done this many times. But even they, it takes some time for them, right? And the question here is, can we find clients quick enough? Can we onboard companies quick enough to our system and keep them in our ecosystem? Because Microsoft doesn't have the flexibility, and also OpenAI. OpenAI is 5,000 people right now. Like, when they launched ChatGPT, they were 700. Right now, they are 5,000 people. So even though they're churning out like stuff very quickly, they have some bureaucracy. For startups, the best thing that the number one thing that you can do is to outpace them, because you're flexible, quick, you respond to user feedback, you're bringing, I don't know, you have some loyalty people. I know many of our customers, right? So I chat with them, LinkedIn, whatever. This is kind of what we can provide to the users. And most recently, and this is where I need the graph, right? ChatGPT on its own and these LLMs, they solve 60-70% of the problem, which is if you have this distribution and the fat bit of it is what the LLM solve. And then you have a very long tail of stuff that you're trying to do with ChatGPT, but it can't solve just yet. I don't know. You want to pass it, let's say, 5 links and make some super weird shit with it, combine them in some ways and then create a video out of it or whatever. There is a kind of a almost a product for most of these things, but you know, the future towards which we're many people in the industry are building are these agents. And like, you have an agent that solves many of these long tail problems that very few people have, but they're very high value for them. And you know, apart from the main bit that you need to solve, which is, you know, general availability of models, there are these agents that are doing very specific tasks very well. And I'm not talking about, you know, customer support agents or, you know, people that don't know what AI is. They talk about the only thing it solves is customer support and stuff like this.
In fact, content generation.
Kind of, yeah, yeah. But the actual value is in automating workflows which are very specific to yourself that you constantly have to go through. For instance, with the podcast that you have, I'm sure that you're using Opus or something like this, where you take the podcast, you slice it in shorts, you put in some subtitles. Yeah, you do this?
I do the script. Yeah, yeah. But well, I manually choose the bits because I'm still better than AI. But yeah, I know what you mean.
Well, if you have the proper interface to choose these bits, you know, you can do this much better. And actually, these agents and with all of this AI, we're going towards a time where you will no longer need to choose the bits. You just need to approve the bits, right? So the AI is choosing them. And then you just say, I like this one. Yeah. I don't like this one. I like this one. And this is a workflow which is less common. There are a lot of them now. But, you know, if you want to customize it a bit, this is where a lot of value can be created. So tools like ours, we have the user base, we have the large language models at a low cost. We have been providing value for a long time for the people. We have built a lot of stuff. And now we're solving more and more problems to these people with the help of AI. That said, I think that AI is so powerful that there will be work for basically all of us. A question for you is like, is the internet too small for all of us? Like, anybody can do something on the internet nowadays, right?
It's going well to be the said. Well said. Sorry. I just loved what you just said. Like, AI is so powerful, there will be a lot of work for everybody. And I love that mindset a lot better than, oh my God, AI is going to steal all our jobs. No, potentially, I think it will give a lot of us more exciting, more, creative jobs and a possibility to do better and quicker and all that. But anyway.
But this is what technology is. The whole point of computers is to allow you to do stuff faster, right? Even like the place where we're recording this podcast, we're recording in Riverside, one of the best places for podcasts. But
Shameless plug.
back in the day, when I was recording a podcast, I had to record the audio locally on like Audacity or I don't know what we were using. We were recording the video on some other software. Then we had to stitch the stuff and so on. And what a software like Riverside is giving us is cutting a bunch of steps and empowering you to do cooler stuff. It would take me 7 hours to edit a podcast back in the day. 7 hours
Oh,
from
good
beginning to
God.
end. It's one working day. And yeah, it shouldn't be like this.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, I am using Riverside, and maybe I'm missing something on Riverside, but I just enjoy editing with Descript and with Descript with AI. Basically, you just click on it, edit for clarity, blah, blah, blah. And then, like you said, you just approve whatever they're doing. It's not perfect, but I'd say, I don't know, it automates like 70% of what I used to do manually, like even half a year ago. So it's moving super fast. All right. So kind of closer to how people are actually using it. And you've been educating people about this too, and already established that, oh my God, I think like 99% of people who are using AI don't even know the possibilities. Like sometimes it just kind of eavesdrop on like what our AI department or all the devs that we have in SAS Group are doing with AI. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm like so behind, so basic, but still, trying to get there. But, with you educating people and with all the courses that you had and with your approach to, giving people the tool and kind of make them collaborate, also as a way to educate them how to use the product. What is kind of the biggest use case, and what do people struggle with when they use AI? Like, is it getting prompts right? Is it getting consistency? What is the deal there?
Good question. There are many, many, many different things that people struggle with. I would argue that the biggest problem for using AI is a general understanding of kind of the concept of this whole thing. And I usually phrase it like this, before you use AI, before you have started actively using AI all the time, you have no idea what it can do. And then you need 3 to 5 to 10 different conversations with the AI. I don't know, 5 to 10 times you need to be mind blown by how it solves something for you. This is the moment it clicks in your head. And once it clicks, you're very hungry for it. And you're like, oh, what else can I do with the AI? And then people open their minds and then they start using it all the time. And then they believe it more. And then you go on this journey of AI mastery, let's put it like this. Now, I imagine this is a pyramid because it's kind of when you build up knowledge, knowledge is very hierarchical. Think about it like this. You have first 7 years of your life where your parents are parenting and you need to become a person kind of. Then you go to school, high school, university, whatever, work. And these things build on top of each other. And if you're missing the first 7 years, we have an expression for this. This person is missing their first 7 years because it's such a big deal. Or if you don't go to high school, it's very hard to go to university and so on. And this is very well documented and researched in academia. And we've created online courses and we've been, always thinking about how do you make sure a person has all the fundamentals? How do you make sure that they have all the tools so that you can build up to, let's say, deep neural networks? And it's a whole, theory and methodology. Now, when it comes to AI, we expect people to be, oh, just use ChatGPT and it's gonna be fine. Like, you're gonna figure it out. And then you have a bunch of stuff that you have to think about first. What are the fundamentals? Like, does this person even know what artificial intelligence is to begin with? And I have found that there is this spectrum from non-technical person to technical to very technical person. And you know, the more technical you are, the more of the fundament you've got covered, and the faster you can progress to become extremely good at using AI. Unfortunately, this ties back to high school, university, and so on. So, like, people who are less technical, they're already a bit behind the more technical ones when they start using the AI. So, this is the first fundamental thing that people struggle with. Me as an educator, like, I have to figure out in which bucket are you? Are you technical or are you non-technical? The approach is completely different to, you know, talking about AI even. Assume that you're non-technical, and I'll talk about non-technical people because they're much more
Oh,
interesting
I
to
am
me.
non-technical.
Okay,
Talk about
great.
me.
I'll talk about Anna. Yeah.
Thanks.
So Anna is a very smart person who can get stuff done really well and can understand concepts very quickly. However, for Anna to use the AI well, she first needs to know the first thing about AI. Like, what is AI? Like, what do we call AI? And, you know, this is a whole theme on its own that you have to kind of understand. We have been using AI with Google search, with Netflix recommender systems, with Amazon telling us what to buy, so on. This is the old kind of old school AI. The new AI that we call AI is language models, conversational interfaces, AI that can deceive you, it's human. And this is a very key understanding, right? So ChatGPT deceives you that it's human. It can act like a human. No, it can talk like a human, right? And the question is, what are the constraints of this, right? And I think this is the fundamental thing you need to understand. These models, they don't have access to the internet. They're trained on some kind of data set. This data set is the whole internet. So this is where it becomes confusing because they scraped the whole internet and then they compressed it into this model. And this is what a large language model is. And now when you use ChatGPT Web or TeamGPT with the web, we actually connect to the web, take the information, and we use ChatGPT to just phrase it in the proper way. But we basically scrape Google and we take a Google search and we show it to you. Because the models themselves, they can't search the web. Now, if you know how this works, you're kind of one step closer to understanding what is possible, right? And I think this is very key for understanding. Anyways, I don't want to turn this into a lecture of like, I can send you materials and stuff, but like, first you need the fundament. Then you need to have the right tooling. For you, this would be maybe some marketing tools which are using AI. Maybe it's going to be TeamGPT. Maybe it's going to be something else. For coders, they do their work in a special place, the IDE. Like, this is the code all day. This is where they use their AI. So for them, it's completely different. But like, to become good at AI, first you need the fundamentals. Then you need to find the right toolkit for your, let's say, level of technicality or for your work. And only then you become one with the AI. You reach the mastery. And what does it mean, one with the AI? And this is kind of the key. This is your goal, Anna. Like, we're talking about you, right? Your goal is the following. Every day, you Google hundreds of times different things without even noticing it. If you check your history for your browser, you will see that you have Googled so many things you don't even remember Googling because it has become a part of your brain. It's an extension of your brain. Oh, this thing. Like, let me check this thing real quick. And you're checking and checking and checking and checking. Your goal should be to default to using AI for almost every task. And this is when you kind of become AI enabled for real and you start learning all the stuff. You know what it's useful, you know what it's not. And I want to end this with I still haven't tried the newest OpenAI deep research agent, whatever, because even I don't have the time to keep up with all the stuff. And it's my job to do it. So don't worry if you don't know everything about it. It's enough if you just use it for the highest impact stuff for your job.
This episode is sponsored by Rewardful. Looking for new ways to find customers for your SaaS business? Consider building an affiliate program. Rewardful is the easiest affiliate tracking platform to set up, manage, and scale for SaaS companies. Building a successful affiliate program can be a little bit intimidating at first, and that's why Rewardful has taken what they've observed from their most successful customers' affiliate programs and distilled that into an exclusive online course. The exciting part? Their affiliate marketing course is absolutely free. Start the course at academy.rewardful.com. Academy.rewardful.com. And turn your biggest fans into your best marketers.
Okay, that makes sense. Tomorrow you were sending me all the materials, so I take the sabbatical and boom. I'm just gone off the face of the earth. But thanks. That was already actually very helpful because, you know, sometimes, yeah, with kind of like that FOMO that you're always missing something, there is DeepSeek that you haven't used, or like, you know, you have no idea what all those devs are working on and how they're automating like 11 different projects to fit them in 15 minutes. You're like, oh my God, what am I even doing with my life? But yeah, thanks. I guess we will have to get to fundamentals at some point before going. Yeah, sure.
Anna, in a world where all the work is automated, the only work that matters is that which is face-to-face, the one that you're doing. So actually, the devs automating stuff, they're doing you a service.
I guess.
Yeah,
I guess.
They think they're automating their work. They're automating themselves, basically.
Probably, yeah, yeah. There, we're actually like, we had this event in Bucharest with founders, and obviously, you know, the conversation on AI started, and we decided that, you know, everyone is kind of confused. Like, there are so many advantages, disadvantages, FOMO, concerns, that we decided that we have to host a round table where the topic will be AI friend or foe or something like this. And we kind of just brainstorm all the ideas, like where AI could be possible or beneficial or where it could backfire. So I think it will be like a never ending 16-hour discussion. So, you know, you should join, but I'll announce it later. But we, you know, before we hit the record button, we agreed that this is not going to turn into just an AI discussion. So I want to
thank you.
Talk to you. Yes, sure. To talk to you about growth, you know, head of growth. I want to know how you're growing because, you know, like you said, 27,000 users in 10 months. This is pretty rapid. And, you know, yes, okay, maybe it's timing, it's AI wave, whatever virality everyone wants to know. What the next big thing could be. But I'm pretty sure that, like with any other SaaS, if the product is shit, it wouldn't go anywhere. So, you know, for you, was it the product driving the growth? Was it, you know, your kind of reputation with your educational materials and whatnot you were doing before? What is it?
So the first 30K users, I was the only marketer on the team. So I was marketing this myself. And it was with our current marketing team, we haven't reached these like numbers yet. So now we're like 5-6 people and we haven't brought another 30K people. Timing is definitely super important. I would say, you know, you can make miracles if you're very early. I can't attribute everything to my marketing genius. It was more timing. When it comes to the marketing of a new product, I have kicked off 10 different products or so, there is kind of a boilerplate what you want to do. You can think about, let's say, product hunt, and then you launch on LinkedIn, and then you do friends and family, and then you do whatever, and so on. The ones which are most well-known don't work. So product hunt doesn't work. And I must say, product hunt has brought us like between 1 and 5 signups for our product hunt launch of TeamGPT. 5 signups. This is like nothing. I get more from like a random LinkedIn post about some bullshit. So product hunt doesn't work. And the question is, what works? Now, I tested more than 20 different campaigns. So I had a timeline for like the 9 months, and I was time capping them. Each campaign needed a beginning and an end, certain resources allocated to it, and so on. And we started testing them out. I will give you several campaigns which were extremely successful for us. First, it was SEO. So SEO, I always do it. The name was TeamGPT. We will change it eventually, but it's helping us at this point. And TeamGPT, I had the name. I probably created the first page on collaborate with ChatGPT before OpenAI and before everybody else. We started selling through SEO before we had a product working. Like, I was selling the website, and I'm like, okay, I'll do some basic SEO. Like I can't leave it with no SEO. Basic SEO started driving sales. So SEO was working, so we doubled down on SEO, and currently this is the channel we're investing the most in, and we're bringing a lot of organic traffic through SEO. Now, SEO is a very good fit for us because we create a lot of content and we generally do the how-to guides and we're good at these things, but it's a very good fit for my team. So SEO was the first one. When you're early, this could work. Later, if you start a business right now, don't do SEO. Like, it's too late. Not only we will beat you, but also Zapier, Monday.com, everybody is doing these AI articles and they will outrank any keyword at this point. So this was the first one. Second one, we got together. So we recorded 100 videos with our head of product. So how are they recorded? We simulated a podcast like this. This is not a simulation. This is like a real podcast. And I basically wrote 100 questions that I knew the answers to. And the questions were like, how much did it take to train GPT-4? How much did it cost to train GPT-4? What is the difference between machine learning and artificial intelligence? Is AI safe? All of these things that people are wondering about. I handed 100 questions to our head of product and I said, we have 2 days. This is like the most we can do. I got one of my friends to record, and she asked me 100 questions in front of a camera. We recorded for 2 days straight. These were 100 videos, which were starting with her asking a question and then me answering as a guest on this podcast, right? They were super well timed, 1-2 minutes each. And then we promoted them on Instagram, LinkedIn. So Instagram, TikTok, Facebook Reels. We did YouTube Shorts. We also did the horizontal ones. We did 2-3 questions together into a YouTube video. So we just like promoted it everywhere. On my personal LinkedIn, I'm still scheduling from these 100 videos. Now, this campaign brought us 10,000 followers on Instagram, thousands of followers on YouTube. TikTok wasn't working quite well. We got banned like 3 times, but that's another story. But like all of these, they were putting eyeballs on us, and it took us 2 days to get this done. And then we were using these for ads later on. And this was a very successful campaign, right? Finally, and by the way, I want to say that when you're in marketing, you have to think about the whole journey and how you kind of create this sense in your customer that you're the only company that exists. And basically, you need at least 7 touch points. You know, research shows this. So we had these 7 touch points, and they were like, let's say Instagram or something like this. So they find us on Instagram. They come to the website. Once you hit the website, we start retargeting you like crazy. We retarget you on Facebook, target you on YouTube with videos, which are from these 100 videos. And you start seeing us everywhere. Everywhere you go, you see us. And then I would add you on LinkedIn. and then you would start seeing my content, and then you would start receiving emails from us, and then, you know, and it starts this whole thing, and everybody's like, oh my God, everybody's talking about this company. They're everywhere, but you're just in the bubble, right? You're in the bubble of our marketing team, which is just me. And this is kind of something which was like, this is how marketing should be done. And then when you try to do it at scale, you basically go on other people's podcasts, and this is how you enter other audiences. But yeah, so this was very key to our strategy. It was a whole holistic marketing strategy, and each one of these campaigns was bringing us closer to kind of having this full 360 around the customer. Final thing which really worked well, we created an online course. I couldn't help myself. I created this online course with the fundamentals. Once I realized this thing you asked me about, how do you learn? Once I internalized this, once I understood it, I created a course for the fundamentals. This course is still somewhere online for free, and it could be found. I will be reworking it because things are changing and more information needs to be added. But generally speaking, this course, it was 1 hour and it had hundreds of exercises, thousands of use cases that we had identified and we had put in front of the people. And what we were saying was, if you go through this course, you will be better than 99.9% of the population, which is technically true because they don't know what AI is anyways. But everybody who went through it, they kind of built this loyalty to the product because we taught them how to properly use AI. And this was quite powerful for our early users.
Awesome. All right. I'll link it down below. And, you know, great marketing campaign. I'm only saying because it sounds exactly like what we are doing.
So, you know what you're doing, then.
I guess. But thank you. I guess that's the validation that I needed all these 2 years of working on SaaS group branding. But yeah, super cool. Thanks for sharing, you know, like real examples. I think that would be super helpful for a lot of people. And yeah, I think when you're doing kind of like this video first approach, and I'm only stealing the term from Craig Hewitt from Castos, it works so well, and you can repurpose it in so many ways and kind of like make so much stuff out of it. It's great.
Totally recommend it. Is the most important thing. I want to add to this. These 100 videos, we added them on our website as SEO articles. So we would put the video and then we would transcribe it. We would put it to ChatGPT and we would say, create an article based on this with a better prompt, right? And then we would put the article. It would take us, I don't know, 15 minutes to publish an article with this video. And it's a SEO optimized article. It has a video in it. And now these things are ranking, actually. And we're getting a lot of traffic out of this. So, yeah, the name of the game is repurpose content. And really, it has to be done all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. No, 100% agree. And, you know, it's so similar. We are even launching our own course. So, you know, there you go. Yes.
Where are you launching it?
Oh, it's just going to live on SaaS Group's website, everything about M&A, exiting, how to exit, who to exit to. Spoiler alert, SaaS Group.
Is it free or paid?
It is free. Completely free.
Okay. You have to slice and dice it in some way, put it on YouTube. Anyways, people never connect the two. Like, they don't have a problem with putting it on YouTube and then on your website.
So you should definitely. Yeah. No, it's gonna be everywhere. I'll tell you later. We'll share the marketing wisdom after we push the stop button. Anyway, I wanted to ask you because, you know, you were talking about keywords and then you were talking about prompts. And this is the question that I already asked the founders of Otterly AI. I don't know if you know the tool. It's basically a tool that keeps you updated and lets you monitor how your brand is portrayed in AI, like in all the AI-powered search engines. I was kind of curious, what is the ultimate difference between long-tail keywords and prompts. So like if I am optimizing, say, an article on SaaS Group's website, and I want to make sure we're ranking for how to sell your SaaS company. So is that still a long tail keyword nowadays, or is it already a prompt if I put it in ChatGPT? Like, what is the deal here? Like, how, like, what is now the difference? Like, how to sell your SaaS company? Should I put it in Ahrefs, or should I put it in Otterly because it's a prompt and I want to, like, boom, I'm so confused. What's the difference?
Yeah. So I think the main thing we should be, you're looking with this curious look. You really want to find out.
Yes. I'm like,
so the topic which is arising in these founder communities, let's say in San Francisco, is basically, will Google search be changed for, let's say, ChatGPT search, Perplexity search, Google search, but with AI? And it's a good question. We are kind of unsure how this will roll out, but it is definitely clear that on Google search, although nobody knows how the algorithm works, we're kind of on equal footing, all of us. While when you're using ChatGPT, when you're using even TeamGPT, so we don't do this, but we have the control to basically plug in some information. And OpenAI can do it, Perplexity can do it. So the tool that you're using has control over the final result. And this is a very weird thing because it's kind of from democratized search, it's kind of going into private hands, like more or less. And it is an ongoing question, what is going to happen. Now, people think that ChatGPT is going to start showing ads. So similar to Google Ads, it's going to say, this is the curated answer. And this is like, in the, you know, the first result says kind of paid on it or something like this. So it is possible that we're going towards the future of this. Now, when it comes to ranking, and this was your original question, was do you rank for keywords? Do you rank for prompts? Ranking for keywords is connected to search and to searching on Google, searching on Bing, which is important because ChatGPT is using Bing. We don't use it, but ChatGPT is using it. And Perplexity. So if you are optimized for long tail keywords, you're still optimizing for these web stuff. ChatGPT with web, Gemini with web, especially Gemini with web, because they're using Google, right? So keyword research and long tail keywords, they still matter a lot. Now, when it comes to prompts, and I don't know how these guys are doing it, but the general idea is that these models are trained on some kind of data sets, and you want to inject your brand in these training data sets, and you want the next time GPT-5 is trained or something like this, you want SaaS Group to be mentioned 5 gazillion times so that it pops out every time, you know, someone asks about something. Now, this to me is a bit naive in the sense that I think you cannot game it. Even if you game it for a while, this is not long-term defensible in any way. While we marketers know that if you create good, useful content for people, it will eventually, cream rises to the top, and eventually you will show up. You will show up in Google, you will show up in the web versions of these AI tools. And a testimony of this is one client came to us and he said, they asked ChatGPT in OpenAI, what is a tool which is like ChatGPT but has better collaborative tools? And it said TeamGPT. And they churned from OpenAI to come to us and they asked ChatGPT about it. So we're ranking on ChatGPT right now because we've done good stuff on the content side. And we haven't optimized for any prompts or any long-tail keywords. Yeah, we've optimized for a lot of SEO stuff. But at the end of the day, it's about the content and how useful is what you're creating.
Okay. All right. I still need, I guess, a little more understanding on like maybe the technicality of how to get there. Because like when I ask Perplexity about SaaS Group or like Serial Acquirers or whatever M&A and SaaS, it does rank SaaS Group really well, right? And like it's always there. It's like I don't know, it comes before Constellation Software, right? And Constellation Software has been there for eternity. So is it because we're doing such a good job? Is it because it's me asking? Is it because there has been a history of me asking about SaaS group? So like, I want to know how it kind of works to trick me into thinking that we're doing such a good job.
Whatever I answer to this, it probably will be untrue 6 months from now. So these things change too fast. Generally speaking, probably you have been around for a long, long time. You are doing a very good job on multiple fronts because this is how trust is built, not only with people, but also with AI. It's like there are multiple sources saying that SaaS Group is a legit company. This is very important for the AI. And that's why gaming the system doesn't work, right? Because you need a lot of sources to be there. And then why the AI decides something, we don't know. And there's a lot of black boxing involved. And that's why people are scared of it, because it's a black box, makes a decision, shows SaaS Group instead of whatever, shows Team GPT instead of OpenAI. It just thinks this is the more relevant resource for this person at this time.
Interesting. Fun times. But okay, I have a couple more questions, and I don't know how short you are in time.
I can go over time.
Cool. Yes. Okay. Then one more question is, you guys raised funds, right? Fairly recently, $4.5 million, if I'm not mistaken. Yes. So why did you decide to go that way? You know, you rode the wave, you got the 30,000 people going to Team GPT. Do you think it's kind of inevitable if you're growing an AI tool to go faster to make sure that you're funded? Or what was the kind of the backstory?
First of all, yes. So you need to get external funding, not because you need it, but because since everybody else is doing it, they will crush you. Like companies much worse than ours getting funded with like 5 million, 10 million, 50 million, they're going to crush us. Like no matter how well we do, they're deploying capital. And the question there is with the VC money is, can you deploy capital fast and can you deploy it in an efficient way, which is giving return on investment? And basically for our team, I have done this before. I know how to deploy large sums of capital. And I knew that if I have access to more capital, I would be able to grow faster, outpace my competition, take advantage of this timing. And the timing is very key, right? Because the time is now, currently, thousands of unicorns or future unicorns already exist, but they're in the making still. And they're funded or not funded, and they're working, and they're going to be unicorns in a couple of years, maybe 10 years, maybe 5 years. But it's now. And there is this proportional relationship between how much money you've put in the business and how much money you're making and how valuable the company is. And the thing is, if you put in, think about it like this. If I put in the company zero money, and then I make a very successful business, I'm a legend, bootstrapping legend, and this is great. And I have literally done infinite return on investment on my investment. If I put in 1 million to make 100 million, I just have to 100x. If I put in 10 million to make 100 million, I just have to 10x. So it becomes even actually easier when you have more money to do the stuff. And so it's easier in some ways, but you have to be very fast. And this is why you're taking the capital, to be extremely fast. Now, for me, I looked at the market and I saw how whatever advantage we had when we started, one person getting 30,000 people, it was gone. And this was not repeatable. I couldn't do it again on my own. I was, by the way, working 15, 16 hours per day. I was so tired of everything. And I knew what needs to be done. I had the right market hypothesis. We had the users and all of these things. I need more people, more hands, so that we can actually make a good product much faster. And when you're competing with well-funded companies, it becomes a bit logical. Now, final thought on this is I had never raised this venture capital before. I didn't know what it is about. And I had a meeting with this VC from Sequoia Capital. This was my first VC meeting. And the guy was expecting that I would pitch him. So we had a first meeting. He liked me. Then we had a second meeting. And I kind of didn't know how to pitch him. I didn't have a pitch deck or anything. So I came to him and I said, listen, mister, thank you so much for your time, but I have a couple of questions I need to ask you. And I had like 30 questions that I had for him. How much money can I raise? Can I raise from Silicon Valley? Where do I need to incorporate? How much, you know, how fast is, how much time is going to take me? Like, what do I need to show? What are they looking? And I asked all of these questions to understand what it is about. And then in the fundraiser, and then I got really excited. I'm like, okay, if I go through this process, I will grow so much as a person and I will see the business from a different perspective. And this is kind of one of the biggest reasons on a personal level I wanted to do this, because I wanted to go through the journey. I wanted to build a very impactful product, but at the same time, I wanted to see the perspective from a VC-funded perspective. And finally, final thing, which for founders is, I think, underrated, I now have access to so big pools of capital, no matter if this business is successful or not. If I do my best shot and if I give it everything, next time I will be able to raise 5 million like this, extremely easy. Like if the business fails, not because lack of effort or something, but like something else. If the business is successful, again, I will have access to much smarter people, much better people than myself, like people who, you know, you need seven links to reach them otherwise. And we're already there. Like our investors are absolutely amazing. They're introducing us to all types of cool people who have built some of the coolest products ever. I met this guy the other day. He's like, I was VP of product of Yahoo, then VP of product of LinkedIn, and then VP of product of Atlassian. I have built products in Silicon Valley all my life. Just talking to this person for 1 hour, you learn so much and you, I don't know, become so much better at your job. Even for this, it's worth it. So I'm very happy that we did it. I didn't think that this is the reason why we should fundraise, but now I know it's definitely the reason why we should have fundraised, that we get access to all these people, change makers, people who have changed the world already, who want to help you change the world again. And that's very cool.
Yeah, so it's a very positive experience for you. At what valuation did you raise 4.5?
$17.5 million.
Okay. Oh, all right. That's actually not so bad.
It's okay.
That's very doable.
26% dilution. But to us, it's also a question of if you get a higher valuation, we could. If you get a higher valuation, then you have to defend a higher valuation. And I would much rather, you know, raise again at the lower one. It's complex math. Not complex, but like insider math. You have to understand the process so that you can, and you understand it because you're from the industry. But like all the founders think like this, I want the biggest valuation as soon as possible. And this is actually hurting the company. So
true. Yeah. That's why I asked, because, you know, a lot of AI companies are raising at like ridiculous valuations and you're like, oh, okay. Like why, what are you getting out of it? Except for maybe, like you said, it's a great kind of educational moment. If you're getting to an exit, well, education is all you're going to get. So, you know,
you can't exit with a high valuation. The moment you raise it 100, 200 mil, it's over. Like if you don't build an extremely successful business, you can't exit. While at lower valuations, you can find good exit opportunities. And I would highly recommend to all founders, raise a bit of money at, you know, low valuations and do it again and again and again. And for our next round, I'm aiming at like 70 million, let's say something. So I'm thinking I want to 4 to 5x my current round, and still I don't want to get into crazy valuation land, so I can do it again, right? And then keep on going.
All right, that's great. Well, we have to do it again sometime because, you know, I want to see how this plays out. But all right, just a couple more questions, the usual ones here. So far, you know, crazy story, very successful. What has been the biggest win and the biggest failure?
Oh, yeah. Biggest win going through this fundraising was a moment at which it was extremely tough for me physically and mentally because I was a very successful entrepreneur before this, but I got rejected 84 times before we could raise. People were looking at me as like, you're just a rapper, you don't understand what you're talking about. I've been teaching millions of people how to train AI models. And this confidence that you have in the beginning, it starts shrinking and shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. And in the end, you get into this super self-doubt way, which are like, maybe I'm doing stuff wrong. Maybe this is bullshit. Like, and it really gets to you and it messes up your mind. So to me, just like going through the process was kind of the biggest win for me personally, right? And then this was the biggest seed funding round in the history of Bulgaria. And, you know, this is a very big ecosystem win overall. So right now the whole ecosystem is kind of, you know, yes, it's possible. We can even do it from like from here. So important, not for myself that I went through it, for my team that I didn't lie to them that we're going to go through it. And then for the wider ecosystem, which got somewhat inspired by this win. And it kind of puts our country on the map. There are other companies before us that have done similar stuff, but like it's kind of, you know, builds momentum in the ecosystem. And this to me was very, very important. It was a win who our investors are through ventures. First money in WordPress, Fitbit, Peloton, like proper Silicon Valley fund, amazing people. On our board of directors is ex-head of engineering of Twitter, guy who invented Apache Storm, like incredible people. And to me, this was kind of a holistic win for everybody I know around me because we're all benefiting from this. When it comes to the biggest failure, I think we could have done many things somewhat better. I think we failed in terms of how quickly we were innovating the product. And many of our customers were kind of unhappy with the pace. But you have to understand, I was fundraising for many months. And imagine our business without its CEO and main marketing person. This was a very big strain on my team. And they had to deal with my absence while I was trying to make friends in Silicon Valley. I think it was a trade-off which eventually will pay off, but we lost a lot of momentum and a lot of trust with many of our clients. Sad about it every now and then that, I don't know, if we had the connections already, if we were based in Silicon Valley, that would be much easier. There were many ways in which we could have done these things better. But yeah, I don't know, failure to make our customers much more happy than they were. Now we are at the stage at which I think we're there, but
you can get faster.
We're
so now win some time.
Fast. Now we're
win some
fast.
Time back.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, when you were talking about kind of it making you sad from time to time, it reminded me a little bit of there is a meme when somebody wipes their tears with dollar bills. So sorry, it just,
yeah, it's
sorry, I was fundraising.
It's, yeah, that's what people think. The thing is, you know, my salary is like $10
per
hour.
I'm just kidding.
I know, but there are many, many memes about this. In reality, founders are poor. Founders at seed stage, they're poor. You have to deploy all the capital. You don't get to see any of it. And you can, but like, it's not the right thing to do.
Yeah. Sorry, inappropriate jokes.
No, don't worry.
But, Thank you for being cool about it. But okay, last question. It's always about a hack, and it can be anything. Can be, you know, how to fundraise, how to find your team of investors, how to build great product, how to, I don't know. Mental health was a big, big thing on the podcast for some time, and a lot of founders shared mental health hacks. So anything that worked for you that kind of helps you grow and, you know, become better, and the product as well.
I have so many things that I can say, and I just finished this internal training on mental systems, so I can talk about it for an hour. But if I have to pick one, any type of system, the worst system is better than the best person, than a person. And I would highly recommend to people who want to be successful to build systems, whether they are systems of like physical health, which is like, let's walk 10K steps per day. And this is super useful for your body because it pumps out blood through your body. It gets the stress out and so on. Whether it's meditation and stuff like this, whether it's as simple as, you know, putting everything in your calendar, even your best friend's birthday, not best friend, all of your friends' birthdays in the calendar, their babies in the calendar, the baby names in the calendar, like all of these things, you have to stop thinking about them. Like, you have to find a system which helps you get more stuff done, release the mental load, and try delegate the work to your systems, basically. And I think this is the most useful thing I can say about these things. I don't know.
All right.
Follow me on LinkedIn and I will send you all the materials. Fundraising, I have videos. I've journaled the whole thing. Mental systems, I have a bunch of stuff. Like, I document everything. So I'll be happy to share.
Super. Awesome. All right. Yeah, I always link the, you know, the LinkedIn profiles under the video. So, you know, reach out. Apparently we can get everything and like finally get there and learn about AI. But yeah, thank you. I think it's a great tip. Honestly, like, I don't document everything and I don't build a lot of systems, unfortunately. But when it comes to like, yeah, exercise and kind of like unloading the stress and the FOMO that I was talking about and everything. Oh yeah, working out every day, like working out for my stupid mental health. That's the story of my life. So yeah, that works. So once you get into the groove and once it becomes a system, amazing.
I agree.
But yeah, completely. Cool. All right. I'm glad we're on the same page. Thank you so much for this story. It's been great talking to you. Finally, we got the time. You know, it's exciting to use TeamGPT. If anybody in the audience haven't yet tried it, it's pretty amazing. So thanks for building a great product. Thanks for being here. And like I said, next year, let's do it again and see where you're at.
Thank you so much, Anna, for inviting me.
Sure. Anytime. And take care.
That was yet another awesome conversation on SaaS Unbound. We're always looking for new guests to share their experiences. We mostly talk with bootstrapped SaaS founders, and if you're one, reach out to me directly at anna@saas.group or find me on LinkedIn. If you're not bootstrapped or even not SaaS but have a great story to tell, we want to hear from you too. And obviously, SaaS Unbound wouldn't be possible without the SaaS Group, a founder-friendly private equity company that buys awesome businesses that people love to take them to even greater success. If you're thinking about selling your company or just exploring your options, feel free to visit saas.group, fill in the form, and expect a response in under 24 hours.